What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Rabbi David Wilfond, discussing Babi Yar and Ukraine, and the recent ceremonies commemorating the 80th anniversary of that horrific event. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. I've been clearing out my study at home, which is about, 15 years overdue. It's there I prepare for Too Jewish each week, which means that's where all the books, musical recordings, and requests to appear as guests on Too Jewish land. In going through the stacks and piles of books in particular, it became clear that a huge percentage of recent Jewish books, both fiction and nonfiction, have been Holocaust-related. In fact, the percentage of memoirs and nonfiction accounts that come from Shoah survivors and their descendants, when combined with the books written about different factual aspects of the Holocaust, might represent 50% of all submissions to the show. And then there are all the novels, short story collections, poetry, even young adult books about the 6 million that have been released in recent years. And while these books could fill, entire bookcases in my home, I'm quite sure the folks who've submitted them to me represent just a fraction of the number written on the subject that have been published over that time. As crucially important as it is for us to remember the Holocaust, as central a mitzvah as it is to never forget the destruction wrought on our people in the worst of humanity's many crimes, Too Jewish isn't a show about remembering the Shoah. It's about every aspect of Jewish life today, about what it means to be actively, creatively Jewish in today's world. We certainly do include books, music, and news stories that reflect on the Holocaust, and we'll always actively remember that horrific period and share with our listeners the many aspects of that devastating campaign of intentional international genocide. But there's a lot more to Judaism and to Jewish life than how we were murdered by the Nazis and how so many people failed to stop mass murder or even actively participated in perpetrating it. And Too Jewish has been dedicated for 19 years now to sharing the best of Judaism and Jewish life, from holidays to humor to Torah to belief to food to music to theater to, anything and everything Jewish. And when we focus a show on the Holocaust, that leaves very little time to talk about everything else Jewish, most of which can feel much more positive and energizing. Still, there are many times when events and anniversaries occur that require that we focus on the Shoah. And one such event took place recently. It was the 80th anniversary of the horrific 3-day massacre of Babi Yar in 1941, when the Einsatzgruppen of the Nazis annihilated the Jewish population of Kiev in Ukraine, men, women, and children. To play us in this morning on that somber note, here's a setting of the story of Babi Yar. It's based on a poem by Shika Driz with a melody by Rivka Boyarska and an English lyric by Baruch Kohan, who sings it.
I would hang the baby's cradle on a balcony. Look below, Babi Yar, Babi Yar, would I see. But the house would burn and the flames climb higher till the face of Babi Yar will be smothered in the fire. Ah,
Und ich aufgehangen das Riegel auf der Balken und gehäutet, gehäutet mein Ingele, mein Janko. Ist die Stubantrune mit der Flammfeier, wie sie kenn ich heut, mein Ingele, mein Teil. Du linke Lulu, du linke Lulu, tears flow from every human eye for the guilt of Bobby Yar. Bobby Yar, will I cry?
That was my father, Rabbi and cantor Baruch Kohan, singing his version of Babi Yar, that tragic lullaby. When we return on Too Jewish in a moment, our guest, Rabbi David Wilfond, a good friend of mine and of Too Jewish, talks about a remarkable event he participated in recently at the Ukrainian consulate to the UN in New York, a commemoration of the 80th anniversary of that tragedy of Babi Yar. Find out all about it from Rabbi Wilfond when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki tribe.
Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this fall. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has already created a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A new progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services Friday night and Saturday, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us for in-person Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimcha Tucson.org. We welcome members and guests to our sanctuary safely in person or online. Call 520-276-5675 for more information. Beit Simcha's synagogue is located at 2270 West Ina Road on the north side of Ina, just west of La Cholla, near the entrance to the Foothills Mall property in our own building. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Join us in person Friday night and Saturday morning. email rabbi at beitsimchatucson.org, BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org, or you can join us every Friday night on our Facebook page, Beit Simcha Tucson, for Shabbat evening celebration services at 6:30 p.m. Shabbat morning, Saturday services are at 10 a.m., all with me leading them, preceded at 9 o'clock by Torah study. Facebook page is BEITSIMCHA Tucson. We'll be holding our services with full music, in person, and by virtual experience. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are live and on Zoom. You can access those by going to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or emailing me, rabbi, at BeitSimchaTucson.org. Our wonderful religious school is available in blended format as well, some students live and some on Zoom. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha, to come to services, to our great religious school and Torah Tikes program, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses, everything from Hebrew to Kabbalah, all taught in person and on Zoom, and of course all of our services on Facebook and in person, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675. Join me, Rabbi Sam Cohan, in the newest and fastest growing congregation in all of Southern Arizona in its exciting beginning years. We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish a good friend, Rabbi David Wilfond, who was the rabbi at Temple Shari Tefillah in New York, but was for a long time a star founding rabbi of congregations for the World Union for Progressive Judaism, and did so in Kiev, Ukraine, which started a long train that led to a very interesting experience recently at the Ukrainian embassy to the United Nations. Can you tell us how all this came about, Gingy?
Sure, Sam. When I arrived to the congregation in Ukraine in August, people told me, Rabbi, it's very important that you join us at our annual Babi Yar Yortzeit ceremony. The tragedy of Babi Yar, which was the single worst day of murder during the Holocaust, over 33,771 Jews murdered on Yom Kippur, each shot one at a time.
Yeah, it was Einsatzgruppen at that point, right? They were just shooting Jews.
Right, this is what they call the Holocaust by bullets.
Right.
This was in 1941, before the Final Solution, before the creation of the gas chambers in the extermination camps. It was the Einsatzgruppen, the mobile killing squads. The story I wanted to say is this. I got to the congregation and the elderly people said, Rabbi, it's really important to us that you join us for our Babi Yar ceremony. I said, of course, of course. So they observe it not by the Jewish date of Yom Kippur, because it's just too hard for the Jews, but they did it by the secular calendar date. And what I was told is, meet at a certain intersection in the city. This is the intersection where the Jews were told in 1941 to gather. And so we met at this intersection, and there were a few hundred people there. And what I saw there that I've never seen at any other kind of Holocaust remembrance ceremony, people wearing photographs, mostly elderly people, wearing the photographs of their mothers, their fathers, their brothers, their sisters, uncles and aunts, their relatives who were murdered at Babi Yar. Those who survived, survived because they had been drafted into the Red Army, or they managed to be evacuated. They got on trains and sent them to the east ahead of the Nazi occupation of the city. So you have a significant population that managed to flee, but over 33,000 people were still in the city and were killed within 2 days. So we meet at this intersection, and these old people are wearing the photographs, and the old people are also holding the hands of their children, their grandchildren. And we did a silent march about a mile to walk the same path that those murdered walked from the intersection to the edge of a Jewish cemetery next to a train station where the ravine of Babi Yar is located. A very powerful ceremony. And we went to the site where they were murdered, lit Yahrzeit candles, El Malay Rachamim. And when I was there, I remember thinking, huh, this isn't the Babi Yar site that I saw a few weeks ago. What is this? So I asked, and I was told by people, oh yeah, the Babi Yar Memorial, that's like a Hollywood charade created by the Soviets about 20 years ago. People were saying, it's awful that there is no memorial for the people of Babi Yar. You, the Soviet Union, you need to recognize this. And so the Soviets decided, we're going to make a Babi Yar memorial where it is convenient for us. So they chose a place about a mile from Babi Yar, not the actual site where it happened. And they took bulldozers and they carved out a ravine and they put a memorial, completely inappropriate. It shows bare-breasted women with muscles fighting back against like these German monsters. And it doesn't reflect the reality of religious men and women, secular men and women being led like sheep to the slaughter, not knowing. It was still early in the Holocaust, not knowing what lied ahead of them. So the Jewish community, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, created its own memorial spot, money, local money, and they built the menorah, and that's where we had that ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
You asked about, so you ready to ceremony right now?
Let's talk about that. Let's take a break right now, and when we come back, we'll talk about a very stirring ceremony held on the anniversary of Babi Yar you participated in just recently. We come back with Rabbi David Wilfond in a moment here on Too Jewish. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail.com. Or visit our website, TooJewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there, or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 100,000 downloads on Podbean.
Introductory Judaism offers everything you ever wanted to know about Judaism, but were afraid to ask. Who is Abraham? What is the Torah? What do Jews believe about life after death? Introductory Judaism with Rabbi Sam Kohan is an 8-month-long weekly class Sunday afternoons. It's available in person and on Zoom. To sign up, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org. There is a charge for the class and the textbook, and scholarships are available. The Introductory Judaism class is open to everyone, Jewish or not. Want to refresh and update the Jewish learning you had before your bar mitzvah? Want to know what your new Jewish relatives are all about? Or maybe you're even thinking about becoming Jewish. Register for Introductory Judaism by calling 520-276-5675. Or you can visit BeitSimchaTucson.org. Or you can email rabbi@BeitSimchaTucson.org. Introductory Judaism is taught in person and by Zoom Sunday afternoons from October to May at Congregation Beit Simcha, 2270 West Einar Road, just west of La Jolla. For your very own entry or return to Judaism, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We started talking last week about Malta, where you served in the State Department and had some interesting stories about that. The Malta, not a very large place and not a very large Jewish community at any time, but a very interesting one with some remarkable figures historically. Tell us a little bit about that.
Right. Malta has a rich history that abounds in eccentrics, strangers, refugees, marauding knights, all kinds of
pirates, lots
all
of pirates.
Kinds of special characters, probably because it is so central in the middle of the Mediterranean. And it's a little archipelago. I mean, most people who've never been there think of Malta as one island. Well, the biggest island, where the capital, Valletta, is called Malta. But the other two inhabited islands in the archipelago are Comino, which is tiny and has no roads. It basically has a hotel and the staff live there and they get to and from Comino by ferry. And there's Gozo, which is much bigger and actually has roads and churches and towns and ancient ruins. Malta is a paradise for archaeologists and historians because there's a lot of Neolithic stuff there, old temples, sculptures. that are otherwise unexplained. And if you fast forward to relatively modern times, most Maltese would claim, rightly or wrongly, that the first Jew who came to Malta was St. Paul in a shipwreck on his way from Israel to Rome. There's a town named after him called St. Paul's Bay, and it is widely accepted that he was in residence there and made converts. And in that period of time, we're talking about the late first century of the Common Era.
70 or 60, something like that.
Probably later.
Even later, okay.
Some people say it's 64, some say it's 84, around then, whatever. Second half of the first century. The way most people were converted to Christianity was by first being converted to Judaism, and then being persuaded that the best sect of Judaism, and there were lots of sects and different branches and wings of Judaism competing for adherence in that distant period, that the best sect for them to join would be the Christian sect. Now, this sounds like arcane history, but it was actually the subject of the very first church council in Jerusalem, which took place in or about the year 50 in the Common Era. And the main subject was whether
you had to be Jewish before you became Christian, in essence, right?
Well, but the operationally, the issue was this. The missionaries who converted people charged money and then raised money, and it was a lucrative business. But they thought that they would have a much more receptive audience if converting to Judaism and then ultimately joining the Christian sect of Judaism, which it still was for the first couple centuries of the Common Era. It was just one of many competing sects. If that didn't involve circumcision, which discouraged many people.
Shocking.
And so this church council was inconclusive, and everybody who attended it heard what they wanted to hear. And so some missionaries went on converting pagans to Christianity via Judaism, and others tried doing it directly. And this was a battle within the church for at least 200 years.
Yeah, I mean, certainly that was like the Jerusalem and the Damascus church and the great conflicts as to how Jewish you had to be, and very interesting area. But it fascinating that Malta is where St. Paul apparently landed and did some of his stuff. So if that makes him the first Jew there, that's not a great start for a Jewish community, but we will talk more about that next week.
Well, he was a rabbi.
He was. We'll talk more about that next week. Thanks, Tom.
You're welcome.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. An attorney, Leventhal, suddenly dies. At the gates of heaven, he's met by Moses, who asks his name. He then looks Leventhal up on the records and exclaims, "You were the oldest human being on the face of the earth. You lived to be 137 years old. God will certainly want to meet you. Come right in. I'll bring you right over to see him." Leventhal's shocked. He knows he wasn't any 137 years old when he died. He says to Moses, let me see those records. "I smoked, I drank too much, I was overweight, and at age 62, I had a massive heart attack, and that was the end of me." Leventhal looks at the records. He realizes what's happened. He says to Moses, "Oh, here's the problem. Those are the billable hours." You see, lawyers bill hours and... That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week's portion of Vayera from the book of Genesis is quite spectacular. Early on, it includes the remarkable tale of the impending destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, a traumatic decision by God to try to eradicate all evil from the world. In one of the great scenes in biblical history, God tells Abraham of his plans to destroy the wicked cities, Sodom and Gomorrah, you know, kind of the Las Vegas and Atlantic City of their day. And Abraham nobly steps forward and protests the decision. What if there are 50 righteous people in Sodom? Would God destroy the city then? Wouldn't that be immoral? for the judge of all the world to act unjustly? Hashofet kol haaretz lo yaseh mishpat? God agrees with Abraham's chutzpahdik objection, but the noble Abraham keeps right on arguing. What if there are 40 righteous, 30? Perhaps God won't destroy Sodom for the sake of 20 righteous people, 10, a bare minion. And God agrees even 10 would be enough to save the cities. Of course, there aren't 10 righteous people in Sodom, and these flesh pots of evil are marked for destruction. But it is Abraham's noble defense of the potential for a righteous remnant, theoretical or real, that stands out. For this is the essential way all Jews ever since have interacted with God. We question, struggle, test God, always seeking greater justice in the world. We argue with God and become holier and better people through that process. When we come back on To Jewish, our guest, Rabbi David Wilfon, will talk about his own experience founding the first progressive congregation in Ukraine in Kiev, and his own experience as well at Babi Yar and as a rabbi in Ukraine, and about reckoning with the Shoah in today's complex world at a ceremony, well, just a week or so ago. Find out all about it when we come back on To Jewish in just a moment.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Ukraine's government inaugurated a memorial complex to the victims of the Babi Yar massacre last week, 80 years after the tragedy that's become a flashpoint in the country's collective Holocaust memory. The memorial at the Babi Yar site, Babi Yar is how they say it in Ukraine, where Nazis and local collaborators killed over 33,000 Jews in a ravine near Kiev in September 1941, remains under construction, but it currently features a quartz crystal-studded wall of crying designed by famed Serbian performance artist Marina Abramović, and a new wooden synagogue above the only portion of the ravine into which victims were ordered to lie down before they were shot that remains visible. By 2026, its organizers say the center will also house museum space and additional monuments. The center costs around $100 million. It is all privately funded, most of it from a group of billionaires, including the Russian Mikhail Friedman and Ukrainian-born Viktor Pinchuk, who are both Jewish. Various initiatives to commemorate Babi Yar victims had previously failed to materialize, and for decades, the only reminders of the tragedy of Babi Yar were a couple of small, neglected monuments. The time for memory has come, said Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who is Jewish, at the inauguration ceremony. It's hard to breathe at this place. Thousands of children took their last breath here, he added. Israeli President Yitzhak Herzog spent 3 days in the country for the inauguration ceremony and other events, including a historic meeting of two Jewish presidents. He met with Zelensky at Kiev's Mariinsky Palace. Herzog's father, Chaim Herzog, established diplomatic relations with the newly independent Ukraine back in 1991, when he was Israel's president. The Jewish people have a long and complicated history interwoven with Ukraine, Herzog said at the center's inauguration. In Ukraine, there flourished one of the greatest and most important Jewish communities in the world, including leaders and statesmen, intellectuals, poets, and great rabbis. They all lived, thought, and wrote on the soil of Ukraine. A formative event and a chapter that must never be erased from the annals of the family of nations, he added, an eternal scar on the surface of our planet. Between 1941 and 1943, around 100,000 people, mostly Jews, were murdered at Babi Yar in multiple killings. In another historic unveiling tied to the 80th anniversary of the initial massacres, the new center's researchers published a list of names of some of the more than 150 Nazi perpetrators of the massacre. Herzog praised the Memorial Center, which has been given strong support by the Ukrainian government, saying it corrects the historic injustice of many years of denial and forgetting, and represents a lesson learned and a study resource for future generations. Zelensky may not speak Hebrew, but he greeted journalists at the Marinsky Palace with Boker Tov. The former comedian and actor, who was elected president in 2019, as reported here on Too Jewish, later opened a press conference following private meetings with Herzog by saying Shalom. In other news, for the first time in more than half a century, a Jewish couple was married in Bahrain last week. The wedding, held at the Ritz-Carlton in Manama and certified kosher with help from the Orthodox Union, was a milestone for the Jewish community in the Gulf Arab nation, which opened diplomatic relations with Israel in 2020 and recently made an effort to build a relationship with the American Jewish community. Huda Nanu, Bahrain's former ambassador to the U.S. and the first Jewish Bahraini to hold the position of ambassador, shared the news of her son's wedding. "While I know that every mother thinks their child's wedding is monumental, this one truly was," she said. Bahrain has been home to a Jewish community for more than 140 years, but many of its younger members have chosen to leave the country to study, often remaining abroad permanently. Leaders of the community hailed the wedding as a sign of the community's resurgence and expressed hope that more young people would raise families there. "This wedding was an important moment for our family, the community here in Bahrain, and more broadly for the Jewish community in the region," Ibrahim Dawood Nanu, a cousin of Nanu and president of the Association of Gulf Jewish Communities, said. "The atmosphere was euphoric as we sat around the chuppah, which symbolizes the new home built by the couple. It was also symbolic of the opportunity to further grow Jewish life in the region." Best-selling author Sally Rooney won't allow her recently published novel, Beautiful World, Where Are You?, to be published in Hebrew by an Israeli press because she supports a cultural boycott of Israel, BDS. Like the acclaimed Irish author's first two books, Beautiful World explores the life and romance of intellectual urbane millennials. It debuted at the top of the New York Times bestseller list when published in September, following a publicity campaign that came on the heels of Rooney's popular second novel, Normal People, which was adapted into a TV series. The publicity campaign will not reach Israel, however. The Hebrew language publisher of Rooney's first two books, Modan Publishing House, told Haaretz that Rooney did not give it the rights to her new book because she supports a boycott of Israel. Rooney said that while she would not sell the Hebrew language rights to an Israel-based publisher, she would be open to publishing it in Hebrew with a non-Israeli press or one that complies with the boycott's guidelines. Whether that is even possible isn't clear. Hebrew publishing industry is, of course, centered in Israel, the only country where Hebrew is an official language. Rooney, who is 30, has been open about her opposition to Israel in July, soon after the conflict between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. Rooney was one of thousands of artists to sign a letter accusing Israel of apartheid and calling for its international isolation. The letter called for an end to the support provided by global powers to Israel and its military, especially the United States, and for governments to cut trade, economic, and cultural relations. Rooney's not the first prominent author to refuse to publish a book with an Israeli press. In 2012, Alice Walker, who also supports the movement to boycott Israel, would not allow the color purple to be translated by an Israeli publisher. Ireland has a history of pro-Palestinian sentiment, owing to what many Irish citizens see as a cultural link to their struggles against the British. That is ironic, in view of the fact that the British treated the Jews in pre-state Israel the same way that Brits treated the Irish in Ireland. This summer, Ireland passed a motion condemning de facto annexation of Palestinian land. In 2018, Dublin City Council passed resolutions endorsing a boycott of Israel and calling for the expulsion of the Israeli ambassador to Ireland. "You know, I was thinking of visiting Ireland for a family vacation soon. Maybe I'll go somewhere else." Boycotts work both ways, don't they? And finally, Professor Joshua Angrist, an economist at MIT with dual Israeli-American citizenship, was named one of three winners of the 2021 Nobel Prize in Economics for his work on how public policy developments impact society. Angrist and Stanford University's Guido Imbens shared half of the roughly $1 million in prize money for their joint work on these natural experiments. and UC Berkeley professor David Card got the other half. Natural experiments, which track societal cause and effects, are far more difficult to conceptualize than scientific ones, which compare physical outcomes in highly controlled settings. For example, Angrist and Imbens recently studied the sociological effects of mask mandates and other COVID-19 public health measures. Born in Columbus, Ohio, Angrist got his master's degree and doctorate from Princeton, then went to live in Israel in the 1980s. Angrist taught at Hebrew University from 1991 to 1996 before becoming a professor in the economics department at MIT. He has written several papers about labor conditions in Gaza and the West Bank, and served as a member of Israel's Finance Ministry Working Group on Israeli-Palestinian labor market relations in 1994. Oh, wait, one more story. In the Major League Baseball playoffs, some remarkable history. In one game of the Braves-Brewers series, all the runs were scored on home runs by Jewish players. Rowdy Tellez hit a two-run homer and Jock Peterson a solo job. Later in the series, Tellez hit another two-run homer, Peterson another pinch-hit homer, and drove in another run. In fact, the Brewers only scored 6 runs in their loss to the Braves, and 4 of them were driven in by the Jewish Tellez. That certainly has to be a first in history. In addition, the Braves' Max Fried, another Jewish player, pitched 6 shutout innings and was one of their stars. Boy, there's all kinds of Jewish stuff to tell you about, isn't there? And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world.
Introductory Judaism offers everything you ever wanted to know about Judaism, but were afraid to ask. Who is Abraham? What is the Torah? What do Jews believe about life after death? Introductory Judaism with Rabbi Sam Kohan is an 8-month-long weekly class, Sunday afternoons. It's available in person and on Zoom. To sign up, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org. There is a charge for the class and the textbook, and scholarships are available. The Introductory Judaism class is open to everyone, Jewish or not. Want to refresh and update the Jewish learning you had before your bar mitzvah? Want to know what your new Jewish relatives are all about? Or maybe you're even thinking about becoming Jewish. Register for Introductory Judaism by calling 520-276-5675. Or you can visit BeitSimchaTucson.org. Or you can email rabbi at BeitSimchaTucson.org. Introductory Judaism is taught in person and by Zoom Sunday afternoons from October to May at Congregation Beit Simcha, 2270 West Einar Road, just west of La Cholla. For your very own entry or return to Judaism, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675.
We welcome back our guest, Rabbi David Wilfund. He's known as Gingy because he has red hair. That's what they call people in Israel, as is everybody in his family. Good friend, excellent rabbi. We started talking about a very serious subject earlier in the show. Babi Yar, the single, I don't know, is there a worst day of the Holocaust, but the day in which well over 30,000 Jews were murdered by one of the Einsatzgruppen outside of Kiev in Ukraine, and the commemoration of that. For a long time, the Russians kind of hid the Jewish quality of it, the Soviets, making it into a kind of heroic wartime Soviet resistance thing, which is not at all what happened. It was Jews being murdered by Nazis. Recently, there was a commemoration at... well, go ahead. I'll have you tell the story. I'm sorry.
So last week was 80 years since the tragedy. And a friend of mine contacted me. He works with the Ukrainian embassy and said the Ukrainian government is inviting the president of Israel to mark this event. There's only 2 countries in the world that have Jewish presidents.
Oh.
Israel,
right.
And Ukraine.
Right.
Ukraine now has a president.
So Zelensky, who was a comedian who played the president on TV and then got elected president. It's a, quite a story by itself.
It's a funny story, but it's a good story.
Yeah, it is.
It's a story about wits and what I like to call Yiddishkeit. So this Jewish president of Ukraine said, you know what, it's the 80th anniversary. He is a descendant of Holocaust survivors himself. He said it's appropriate that we finally do a ceremony in coordination with the Jewish people. And he gave out instructions to his ambassadors around the world. If you are a ambassador in a country with a Jewish population, reach out to the local Jewish community and ask them to join you in remembering this tragedy so we can work together to a better future. What a bold, beautiful thing. So I was contacted, known as someone who had once been a rabbi in Ukraine. Would I come to Manhattan, to the Ukrainian consulate, and help lead a ceremony about this event? So in short, I decided it would be appropriate to deliver my words in Ukrainian. I'll be honest, I don't speak Ukrainian. I do speak Russian. I learned it. It's not from home, it's learned, but I decided I need to learn Ukrainian or to speak some Ukrainian for the ceremony. So I contacted a friend of mine, a cantor, born in Ukraine, and I said, please help me put together some words, and she did. And I put together about 15 sentences, and at the end of it, she said, Jinji, I hate this. I said, why do you hate this? She said, this reminds me of the people who killed my relatives. I hate this. Mm-hmm. So I was feeling very guilty and not certain what to do. And I called up a friend of mine who's currently the Reform Rabbi of Kiev, Alex Duchovny. I said, Alex, our mutual friend, the cantor, she told me she hates that I'm going to speak in Ukrainian. What do you think? And he said, you know what? I think it's really important. My mother was hidden by a Ukrainian family. And only because of their kindness did she stay alive during the war. And if it were not for them, I would not be here today. It's okay to speak Ukrainian in appreciation for that family that hit her and the other 2,000 and over 600 families that risked their lives, hid Jews, and kept them alive during the war. So I gave my words in Ukrainian. And the short summary of what I said is that the people in Babi Yar, the people who died, these are our mishpucha, our brothers and sisters, grandfathers and grandmothers, and they're looking at us, and they're speaking to us, saying, we can't speak ourselves. You need to be our voice. What kind of a world, what kind of a society are you going to make? Can you make it better than the past? Or are you going to be trapped in the same cycle of hatred of the past? And this was during the portion of Noah, and the image in my mind was the rainbow. We humans, we're a rainbow of colors, religions, and beliefs. And we've got to learn to respect the differences between us and not try to have one color squash the other colors in the rainbow, but to coexist in a diversity that embraces and honors difference. That would create a future of peace. And that is the hope, that the piece of the story of Noah, of that dove, and not the destruction of the flood that was the Shoah. And I believe it is in our power to learn from our past to make a better future. That's the commandment. We've got to be bold and look forward and do the work.
This must have been a challenge. You haven't been in Ukraine in a long time, right?
About 10 years.
10 years. And to deliver it in Ukrainian, it must have made quite an impact on people still.
The ambassador showed he was a true diplomat. somebody asked him, "No, how's the rabbi's Ukrainian?" And he said, well, compared to my own son, who's 8 years old, and was born here in America and hardly speaks Ukrainian, I find the rabbi's Ukrainian both better and encouraging. Maybe my son will learn Ukrainian eventually.
Well, it, you know, Baba Yar is imprinted on the consciousness of anybody who has studied the Holocaust, and certainly in that community that you served in Kiev. Is the Ukrainian Babin Yar? I've seen it a variety of ways. I always heard it as Baba Yar as a kid growing up.
So Baba Yar is the Russian name, and Babin with an N is the Ukrainian pronunciation. It's basically the same thing, and it means the ravine of the old women. It was thought to be a place that old women used to wash the laundry. But if I could tell you one more short story.
Please.
I was once with some students from my synagogue, maybe about a mile from Baba Yar. It was Lag BaOmer. And we had made a bonfire and we had a guitar. And I think we were about 25 teenagers and 20-year-olds that were singing songs. And the boys were in kippot and the girls were there. And it was still light time. It was like late afternoon. This old babushka, this old woman, comes walking by, and she's got in one hand, I think, a sack of potatoes. In the other hand, she's got a bag of beets. She'd been coming back from the market. And she kind of stops at the end of our group and puts her bags down and stares at us for a while. It was a teeny bit creepy. She's just staring. So we stopped and said, hello. And she said, are you Jews? Yeah. She said, is this a holiday? We said, yeah. She said, I want to tell you a story. My husband's family, they hid Jews during the war and they were caught. Every one of them was killed. Only my husband survived. And she stared at us for a while and she said, I hope you have a good holiday. And she picked up her bags and just kind of disappeared. And we all looked at each other and said, whoa, what was that? And we were wondering, was this anti-Semitic? Was this not anti-Semitic? And we thought about it. Two things. It wasn't anti-Semitic because she wished us a good holiday. She didn't give us any bad words, any slurs. But we think what she was really trying to tell us is you can't tell the story of Ukraine without telling the story of the Jews. And we learned you can't tell the story of the Jews without telling the story of Ukraine, that our faiths have been intertwined for better and for worse. That's our mutual story. And what we took from it was this idea that the future doesn't have to be the past, and we don't need to bury the future in the trauma and pains of the past, because those pains are there. But we've got to find new ways to pick up our bags and go forward.
I think you once told me that there was a Jewish preschool at the synagogue was, I think, almost in view of Baba Yar, right?
Yes, you've got such a profound memory. Our synagogue ran a kindergarten program in a neighborhood called Seretz. Now, I didn't even know this at the time, but the Seretz area was the site of a concentration camp, not a extermination camp, but a concentration camp where tens of thousands of people were killed. One day I'm walking out of our kindergarten and we had been singing Bim Bam, Shabbat Shalom, four-year-olds eating challah, drinking grape juice. And I walk out of the kindergarten, I look up and I notice the huge TV tower of Kiev. It's a giant tower. It's got to be like, I don't know, 15 stories tall. It's huge. And you see from all over the city. And I suddenly realize we're like a quarter of a mile from that tower. Now, the other thing I didn't say is when the Soviets wanted to pick a kind of deserted, convenient location to build a tower, it's at the edge of the Baba Yar Ravine. And I've often thought, what kind of a message does that broadcast to the world? Does it broadcast a message of memory and honor for the martyrs? I'm not so sure if they did that with that intention. But when I walk out of the kindergarten, I look up and I see it, I suddenly realize, oh my God, where are we? Why have we built a kindergarten at a site of tremendous death and sadness? And suddenly I realized, oh, this is the Jewish answer. We don't give in to the despair. We don't give in to the sadness. We give appropriate respect. We've got to sanctify life, live life, affirm life. Our ultimate revenge against the anti-Semites is to not stop celebrating Jewish life and sharing our values, that we believe are good for all humanity, those values of tolerance and peace and human decency to be a mensch, that's not just for us, the Jews. All of civilization needs that kind of decency. And so I began to feel proud near the site of Baba Yar. We're not running away. We're not being hounded out of any country. We have the right to live. We have the right to observe our holidays and values and to share the best of Jewish tradition to help lift up all of humanity in an inclusive manner.
It's a beautiful story. And you were part of that rebirth of Jewish life in Ukraine, in the FSU, the former Soviet Union. And now to kind of bring it full circle and to speak in Ukrainian at a commemoration of Baba Yar, created or encouraged anyway by the Jewish president of Ukraine. It's really quite a circle. Gingy, thank you so much for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Where can people go to find out more about you, by the way?
How to find out more about me?
Yeah.
You can Google Rabbi David Wilfon. If I could give a closing Ukrainian word for everybody to learn.
Please.
When Jews lift a glass, we say L'chaim. When Ukrainians lift a glass, they say Budmo, B-U-D-M-O,
Budmo.
And it means to the future. And so I wish everybody who hears this, L'chaim, to life, and lift a glass, Budmo, to the future. May it be a healthier, better future for all.
God willing. Thank you so much, Gingy.
You're welcome. Be well, Sam. Good luck with all you're doing.
Thank you. You too. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be the wonderful author Dara Horn, a good friend of Too Jewish, award-winning writer of the new book, People Love Dead Jews, Report from a Haunted Present. And don't forget, you can join us at Congregation Beit Simcha in person every Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat starting at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning too, 9 a.m. for Torah study, 10 a.m. for services, Torah reading, and Kiddush, or come online to our Facebook page. Our playout this morning comes from Mordechai Shapiro, Ein Od Milvado, There Is None But God. My friends, may you have a healthy week. God willing, a Shavua Tov, a good week. In a week, we pray of peace.
Chaim tovim, yamim yafim, parnus izgit, afilu chofsha lefamim. Yeladim mevi'im lanu nachat larov, kulam bri'im, yesh smachot,
mazal tov.
Madhim lirot, ech hakol mstader, b'shum davar lanu lo chaser. Ve'rach bizman shekashe nabit lemala, lamash lo nabin shehu achray kan la.
soul goes bust at the seams. Then you scream and cry to the one on high. He's been it from the beginning when you felt like you were winning. He was calling all the shots, he gave you all that you got. So when you're low, just you know he's up above and down below. So
sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.